Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, well, today we have with us on the line Isaac Trainus. And is it? Am I pronouncing it right, Isaac? All right, Isaac Trainus. And Isaac is a college student at the University of California here in Santa Cruz, where I live. And one of my friends called me and told me I really needed to get Isaac on one of our programs. I did. And I thought his message was important enough that I wanted our listeners out across America at this time of day to hear it. Now, you know, we hear all the time that communism is dead. Why, we won the Cold War. There's no more communism. But if that's really true, what about communist China, and what about communist North Korea, and what about communist Vietnam and communist Cuba and so many of the other communist countries in the world? Why do they never talk about them as communist? And then on our college campuses across America, we have Marxist teachers who are indoctrinating our youth in hatred of America and everything it stands for, and adopting these basic socialist concepts that have failed so terribly in Russia and have failed everywhere throughout the world. In fact, certainly Vietnam would not be functioning at all if it weren't that we had granted the most favored nation treaty status, and of course all sorts of loans, the same thing with communist China. Even with communist North Korea, we've given them tremendous amounts of oil and food and building a nuclear power plant for them. And without that, the government would have collapsed a long time ago. So why are they pushing these philosophies on our college campuses? Isaac actually comes from Eastern Europe. How old were you when you got here, Isaac?
Dr. Monteith, I was 7 years old when I came here to the United States. It was in 1989.
Would you speak up just a little bit louder?
Is this better?
Yeah, that's much better. Thank you.
I was 7 years old when I came here. It was in 1989. I came here with my family.
All right, fine. And so you were allowed to emigrate from Eastern Europe. You came to the United States. And now what are you? Are you a junior up there at the University of California?
Well, I'm a senior, and I will be graduating within the next couple of months. Graduation is set for June, and I'm very eager about leaving this university because, I think 4 years in a sort of a socialist bubble is enough for me, and I'm ready to move on to the real world, and specifically in the United States.
All right, fine. Now, are you going to continue with your education? You're going to get an advanced degree, do you think?
I think so, because I chose the focus for politics, international relations, and also history, Islamic world, Asian studies. You can't really do anything tangible with it in the real world, so I would probably eventually go to grad school. But not immediately upon graduation. I'd rather take a break off from the university, because I have a feeling I'm going to come across the same thing even in grad school.
I think you probably are as well, but the important thing is that you know what you believe, even though sometimes you're going to have to get along with your professors. Now, what basically is the underlying theme that you see being taught at the UCSC as far as the America and the free enterprise system?
Well,
you hold that thought. That we're going to be going to have to go to our a break, let some of our stations go, and bring in some new stations, and then we'll, in a few minutes, we'll be all back together again here. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Our guest today is Isaac Trainis, and he's a senior at a major university, where, of course, he's been studying politics and Islamic studies and world affairs and history. And, you know, the thing that I think his message is so important is that all the time the American people are being told that, oh, you know, there is no more Marxism and communism in the world, and yet this is really being taught on our college campuses, isn't it?
It is indeed. Your earlier question was regarding, I guess, what kind of atmosphere is pervasive on the university campus, specifically UCSC, where I go. I would have to say that it's one of like a socialist agenda that's on this university. It's a feeling that anything nationalistic is evil. Patriotism is bad. What, for instance, we're doing in Iraq is not a war for our very own survival, not only as a Western country, but as a country that has been founded on Judeo-Christian principles. It's considered, in fact, a war here on this university, an imperialist war. And I guess, with a single phrase, I could say that at UCSC, it's kind of the hate America first crowd that is the majority on this campus.
Okay, so the majority of the people there, they really don't like our country at all. Do they have anything to say good about it? Because certainly there are things bad with it, but is there anything good about America that makes it worthwhile saving and trying to perfect? Do they have anything good to say about our country?
Well, you know, I think many of them are thankful, for instance, in American capitalist classes for either politics or history that I've taken. The professors and students also voice the fact that they like that America offers some system of welfare for the underprivileged, and so that aspect of America they like. But as far as the America that we have come to know, the courageous part of America, the America that went into the Second World War and fought the good war, and America that was always on the forefront against communism, they do not like. So overall, I would say that they despise America. It's not so much that they like it.
All right, fine. And of course, this welfare concept, these were the basic concepts of Marxism. In fact, what most people don't know is we have far more socialism in America than they ever had in Russia. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this afternoon is Isaac Trainis, who is a senior at UCSC, and his point is that certainly what is being taught on the university, they're very much against the war in the Middle East. Well, of course, there's some people, even good Americans, who disagree with that war, but they seem to feel very little good about America. Would they like to see more government control in an effort to make a more efficient society?
You know, it does seem that they often support greater government, federal or local restrictions on businesses and more government controls on anything that has to do with corporations or even small private businesses. And I guess one of the big ironies I'd like to point out is it's funny because my grandparents, who have dedicated their entire lives to the Soviet Union, they grew up there, they held jobs there, they worked there. We all live here. My family came here, and my grandparents also live here. And the people that are my grandparents' age that still live in the Soviet Union are practically starving. They have no money. The state doesn't offer them any type of handouts or any sort of welfare, and in the U.S. they actually have a system that helps them, and I think it's so ironic when you look at this, how amazing this country is in comparison to what the former Soviet Union was and what it's trying to recover from today.
Well, of course, the problem in the Soviet Union, at least, and certainly the satellite countries, is there's no infrastructure, the industry is not good. Can people over there really own private property, or do they have the right to have private property or run their own businesses?
Well, I know from what I hear from my parents and their experience there in 1989 and before, was that there was lots of nepotism and this concept of blood, which basically means connections in Russian. It's who you know and how many people you know, and that's what really got you around. It wasn't your status or your in society in terms of your intellect or your success as an entrepreneur, because there was no understanding of that. That wasn't valuable. What was valuable was connections. Highest ranking members of the Communist Party were considered somebody that was special and somebody that could help you.
Now, my understanding is that the whole system really sort of ran on a black market, that you really had to bribe people to get anything done. I remember talking to a doctor, and I think it was from either Lithuania or Latvia, and he told me he made $50 a month. And I met him at an international meeting. I said, how can you live on $50 a month? And he said, everybody bribes everybody. I mean, you have to bribe the nurse to get to see the doctor, have to bribe the doctor to get, treatment. You have to bribe the pharmacist to get the medication. And the whole thing seemed to work justly on corruption. Have you ever heard those stories?
Absolutely. You know, it's also you sometimes hear on UCSC people say, specifically students say, well, look at the former Soviet Union and look at the egalitarian system they had and the fact that they had socialized medicine, when in fact quite the opposite was true. What you had was a system that was very private. You had the elite at the top who could bribe them the system and get to places that they needed to go, for instance, getting the surgery that was needed, or I can tell you a story. Bananas were not, there were no bananas in the market in Lithuania in the 80s, and the only way my dad could get bananas for the family, you know, as a treat, was simply by, because he was a doctor, by bribing one of his patients who worked in the Navy, and he brought bananas in from somewhere else in the world. But
do you know how much your dad was making as a physician over there?
Well, I know that he'd always compare it to basically the same amount that a garbage man would be making.
So the doctor would be making the same amount as the garbage man. And so where is the incentive to try to get an education? And then, of course, there certainly is no stature there. And so the doctors, everybody else, had to live off of bribes. And this is the total corruption that exists in a socialist society, which so many of our college students honestly believe is the workers' paradise. What's the attitude on the college campus towards the workers' paradise down there 90 miles off the Florida Keys in Cuba?
Well, they absolutely are big fans of Castro, I can tell you that for sure. They have no idea what the man stands for or the dungeons that he has in Cuba, but I think to them a lot of what appeals to them is the cult of personality, the fact that he seems like such a, I guess, hot, friendly grandfather figure who stands up there and smokes Cubans. But I don't think they really, really want to face the cold, hard reality that you have people coming in by the thousands from Cuba to America and not from America to Cuba.
And I think that's really so important. I get very often people come on and tell me how wonderful Cuba is, and I say, well, you know, how bad would it have to be for people to risk their lives to, you know, in a little boat or maybe on a tube to try to get across the 90 miles there in the straits to America? How many people are risking their lives in Florida to try to get to the workers' paradise? It's all in one direction. But, you know, it's amazing how blind, intelligent young people can be when they never hear the truth.
Yeah, the problem I think would be on this campus here. It's supposed to be an institution of higher education, and yet there's none of it. It's almost, a lot of it's based on emotion, and it's bolstered also by the professors who despise this country. And it's so ironic and sometimes contradictory. It doesn't seem to make any sense, yet it exists, and the university seems like a perfect breeding ground for this type of thinking.
And yet, of course, this is really true all across our state, all across the country, really all across the world, in almost every major university. There are the people who are pushing these Marxist philosophies, and what really doesn't make sense, if you look at it logically, is their salaries are being paid, as a byproduct of our free enterprise system, and the people who are on the boards of the university, for instance, on the Board of Regents, are very wealthy people. In fact, they're put there, many times they're very wealthy and successful industrialists, and yet they allow this sort of thing to go on, and they put people into positions of authority as chancellors at the universities all across America who encourage this sort of thing. In fact, I was here when UCSC was set up, and they brought in radical leftists from all over the world, to staff this university back in the 1960s. So, and certainly the people in our state government who are funding this had to know what they were doing. Why would they be trying to set up almost like a fifth column within our own nation?
Well, I'm sure you know about HUAC and you know about the Red Scare, and it seems to me that a lot of those, I guess you could say, safety nets and institutions that were established to hold back the ideological foothold that was taking place in this country by communist forces was in fact legitimate. It had some real, there were real reasons why these things were set up, like HUAC, and why there was a Red Scare in this country. The problem is that with the fall of the Soviet Union, there's this belief, I think, in this country specifically, that there's nothing to fear anymore because the Soviet Union is gone, the nuclear threat from the Soviet Union has also dissipated, and these university campuses are no threat to us as a country. But I think they are, because these universities are like factories, and they in fact are pumping out new generations of kids who are going to be, like they say, leaders of the future. And it's scary to think that what their concept of America that they might possibly impose on our institutions in this country.
Well, I know a lot of people who actually attended UCSC and graduated from there 20 years ago, or maybe 25 years. Let's see, it came about 1965, so we're talking maybe it's almost 30 years ago. It took them 20 years to unlearn, all the things that they learned there, and suddenly to begin to see the world as it really is, rather than as their professors wanted them to see it. Well, what happens when there's a young man like you up there who has different views, who has come from Eastern Europe, who knows that Marxism is really pretty much of a failure and a sham? What sort of response have you gotten from your teachers?
Well, not very welcoming, I can tell you that. At first, I remember my freshman and sophomore year, I was very open about my views and very blatant when it came to expressing them. But with that comes repercussions and getting judged negatively on your evaluations and getting, instead of that A, a B. And you have to fit the mold on this campus, and you have to go along with the rest of the students and bow down and take what they say as if it's the dogma that is the truth.
Well, of course, that's what's known as academic freedom in America today, ladies and gentlemen out there in the listening audience. They do not allow dissent. In fact, if you were a professor on a campus and maybe you believed differently, you were a conservative or Republican, I've had professors up there who are Republicans who tell me they're afraid to let anybody know how they feel, and they certainly would never think about putting a conservative or Republican bumper sticker on their car for fear of reprisals. And of course, they're not in the humanities. They're, usually in science. At least in science, some of these professors really have a pretty good head on their shoulders because they see reality as it is. But unfortunately, we have actually created a fifth column, in my opinion, all across America, and is being funded with your tax money, and destroying the belief that our children should have, the love that every young person should have for their country. We'll be back in just a moment as soon as we get through the break, and of course we'll invite your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295.
A very important book is called AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991. It tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working within organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done: get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Isaac Trainis, and he's a senior taking political science and history and up at the very liberal college campus where we are. And of course, the problems that you have when the teachers are really not educating, they're indoctrinating them. Of course, have you read that wonderful book by Samuel Huntington on the Class of Civilizations?
Yes, I did read that book, in fact, parts of it. It wasn't because I was assigned to it, although actually in one of my classes the teacher did allude to Samuel Huntington's book. It is a very interesting book.
I throw our listeners out there, let me recommend that this is not light reading, but Samuel Huntington is professor of history at Harvard University, and he's written a book, really a very, very sound book, on the fact that we have different civilizations. We have a civilization, a Western civilization, and there's certainly a Chinese civilization and a Japanese civilization, and there's an Indian civilization in India, and then there's a Muslim civilization. And would you like to sort of let our listeners know a little bit about what the message that I think Samuel and Huntington had, almost a warning to our leaders?
Well, Samuel Huntington's thesis, as far as I understand it, is that once there's going to be a globalizing effect where everybody will come together, countries would devolve into a sort of competition based on civilization, where it would be along the lines that you just outlined, the West versus the Muslims and the Japanese and the mainland Chinese and even the Africans and I think he also had a Slavic civilization and a Russian Orthodox based civilization, and so the threat that his book presents is this like the title presupposes a clash of these civilizations.
Well, of course, my thesis, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, but you know that we can certainly all live together on the globe, but if we try to change or forcibly change somebody else's culture, why we're going to get into real problems. In other words, this will cause tremendous resentment. Would that be a fair statement? That would you think that this is what the message he had?
You know, I would agree with you. You can't just come in and try to forcibly change the culture, but cultures themselves, by their very nature, tend to intermingle and adopt practices from one another, and in the end, you do have a sort of melting pot where cultures share certain concepts, and whether it's the sciences or rituals or stuff like that, but you're right, you can't impose something without suffering the consequences of antipathy.
And of course, the point I think he made was there are 1.25 billion Muslims in the world, and if we try to force them to do something they don't want to do, they will resist with all their heart. If we can convince them, it's one thing, but when you try to force people to accept your values and your cultures, culture is ingrained into us. It's the very essence of our being. Would that be a fair statement?
I would agree with you. When it comes to, for instance, telling people in Saudi Arabia, for instance, that they have to have McDonald's fast food restaurants set up across the peninsula, but I think there are certain values that are universal, and I kind of myself subscribe to the neoconservative understanding that democracy, for instance, is universal, that I think despite whatever civilization you may be coming from, you can successfully adopt this practice of democracy.
What did Plato think about democracy? I mean, I'm sure you've studied the philosophers.
Yeah. It's a mobocracy.
That was what Plato said, and Aristotle, he felt pretty much the same way, didn't he?
I believe so. Well,
yeah. Okay, have they taught you there that the founding fathers of America said the last thing we ever wanted to have in America was a democracy?
I understand that it's a republic.
Right, and there's all the difference in the world between a republic and a democracy, and that was, of course, one of the things I never learned in college. I always thought we were a democracy because everybody said we were a democracy, and it wasn't until I read the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the Federalist Papers, I realized never once did they say, we want a democracy here. In fact, it was James Madison who said, democracies are air spectacles of turbulence and contention, are air incompatible with the rights of personal liberty and private property, and are usually as short in their lives as they are violent in their deaths. That's the 10th of the Federalist Papers, which are never taught in our major universities today. And we're going to be back in just a moment with our special guest. We'll welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295.
me help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Kaur's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Kaur's book, Ode to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry, Theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaur will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaur.
Sophisticated investors are buying gold and silver today because the dollar has lost almost 50% of its value in relationship to the euro, and the price of gold and silver has increased almost 40%. If you're interested in learning more about precious metal investing, why don't you call Bo at 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177, or visit him at Elliott's Stamp and Coin Shop in downtown Santa Cruz at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building, which is located between Trader Joe's and the Signature Twin Movie Theater. Bo's telephone number is 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177. And he's located at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building. And if you mention you heard about Elliott Stamp and Coin Shop on Radio Liberty, why, you'll get a 15% discount on some non-investment items.
Leading-edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
And we'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest this afternoon. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is Isaac Trainis, and he is a student at the UCSC, coming from Eastern Europe, coming from a communist nation. Of course, seeing the total difference of life here than it was under communism. And yet, of course, the college professors are all teaching how wonderful all communism is, and the workers' paradise, and Cuba, and of course, this wonderful experiment they had over in Russia. How do they explain that the system seemed to have collapsed from within? Do they bother to try to explain it?
No, they don't even address the issue of the collapse. Most of them take it as it is. Oh, it just happened. It just collapsed, as if it was some kind of strange anomaly. Many of them also believe, as far as students go, that it was just a accident of some sort, and maybe in the U.S. they can jumpstart a communist revolution. And it almost seems comical, but it's kind of scary if you really think about it, because they are absolutely fanatical about this, and they're convinced. And on the campus they have journals, newspapers they pass out called the Workers Party of America. And
is that the Worker? Is that the Communist Party newspaper?
Yeah, the Communist Party newspaper, and they pass this around on the campus, and and they have lots of support at UCSC for this sort of ideology.
Do they have the magazine, the Political Affairs, which is really a beautiful magazine put out by the Communist Party USA?
No, we actually have a conservative. We had a Redwood Review, which was passed out by the College Republicans to sort of give it a balance between that newspaper, which was against the U.S. and then against its principles, and the Redwood Review, which was sponsored by the College Republicans, that kind of upheld what this country stands for.
Well, is that still being put out now?
No, it's not, unfortunately.
All right. Well, we've got Dean calling from Canada. Okay. Hi, Dean. How are you doing? What part of Canada are you in?
I'm already on.
Oh, yes, you're already on the air.
That was awfully fast.
All right.
I'm calling from about 35 miles east of Windsor, Ontario.
All right, fine.
Just across the ditch from Detroit.
Right, okay, fine. Did you have a question or comment?
I just wanted to comment and to affirm everything that the young fellow was saying is true. I've known many college and university students, as well as having had enough conversations with even instructors to know that the entire, even down to the elementary level, have been entirely co-opted. Many a thing I myself have learned from them equated to nothing more than communistic tenet. And, well, I hate to use even the term moral and value, but that's pretty much all they were for. It was indoctrinating. And it is very much iron-fistedly enforced, very much like the communist rules for revolution, where anybody that gets out of line in any way, you hammer them back in place, or you vilify them and ostracize them to make sure that they can't infect anybody else with their free ideas. And what the young fellow was saying about the collapse of the Soviet Union, I tried having a rational discussion with a communist back about 5 or 6 years ago, and all he could do was get emotional, and that supports exactly what you folks have been saying thus far. The only thing that these individuals have to argue on is emotion, because like in the old East Germany, the old tool that Stasi used, as per their saying, if you can control your enemy's emotions, you can control their mind, and that's as a last resort, their final means to win us over, if you will.
All right. Do you have any comment at all on what Dean is saying, Isaac?
Well, it seems that we agree, and I would have to say that he should come and live in the U.S. rather than Canada. It seems that Canada is a lot closer to socialism.
Yes, indeed it is. But there is a growing undercurrent, and although I'm one of few people who are willing to put our name and face on the map to show we don't agree with the way things are being run here and to proclaim the truth, even so, we're still, shall we say, getting it from as many angles as is possible.
Well, the nice thing is that we do have a voice up there through the internet and through shortwave. So even though you may not have quite the ability to communicate quite as well as you might like, at least you can get the programs there from the United States.
Yes, and this is something I'm eternally grateful for folks like you, Dr. Stan, and all the other good folks that have been on the shortwave since I can remember, and proclaiming the truth, and may God continue to bless you for what you're doing, because if there's one thing this world needs, it's the truth.
Amen. God bless. Thanks very much. Well, let's go to Jim, who's calling from Missouri. Hi, Jim. How are you doing?
Hi. I feel for your guest.
Well, he's doing pretty well. He's a very intelligent young man, and he's almost ready to leave there. But I think it's so important that he does get a graduate degree, and that he does get into some sort of a university setting where he can balance off some of the things that are going. But did you have a comment for anything else, Jim?
A couple. I just read on the internet not an hour ago about a lady who, with the socialized dental care in England, just pulled 7 of her own teeth with her husband's pliers this past weekend.
She couldn't
find a National Health Service dentist to go to.
Well, I know when I was over there, I guess 30 years ago, talking to the professor in Edinburgh, professor of orthopedics, he told me he had two lists. One, of course, was the emergency list. He could take those patients right in. The elective list of orthopedic procedures he never got to, unless, of course, you were a commissar. That was his word. If you were a commissar, he had to get you in right away.
That was a commissar in England?
A commissar in England. That was the term that the professor of orthopedics used. So
I know. I just... didn't realize they would use it over there. But,
of course.
You know, I read in Newsweek magazine back in the, I guess it was the mid-90s after the fall, they talked about a good-sized Soviet city that only had one cardiologist. And coincidentally, his office was located on the fifth story of a building with no elevator.
Would you like to comment on that at all, Isaac?
Well, yeah, it takes me back. It just reminds me of everything that my dad had said about the medical facilities in where we were from, Lithuania, and that, you know, was part of the former Soviet Union and one of the satellite states. And it sounds very much the same, you know, doctors walking around in dirty smocks, and you know, the same thing is actually going on in Cuba.
Wasn't Lithuania one of the wealthier parts of the Soviet Union?
You know, today Lithuania is doing pretty well compared to the GNP, compared to Russia as a whole, proportionally. But back then it had its own difficulties economically.
Socialism doesn't work, as you well know, Jim. And so why are we adopting it here? Anything else you wanted to say?
Well, this might be interesting because I'm sure your guest has heard the phrase at college that our country is so ravenous that we're plundering 25% to 30% of the Earth's resources.
I have heard that. I've heard that in my
class. Did you know that we also, this might be helpful to point out, although I realize, you know, you got to pick your fights when you're in college. There is a direct relationship between the amount of the resources that our country uses and the percentage of the wealth that our country creates for the entire world.
And, of course, in the past, we have created the wealth. Now we're shipping it all to communist China and to Mexico. We're shipping our factories, which are the basis of our wealth throughout the world. And that just doesn't make sense, Jim.
Well, Dr. Stan, I honestly can't figure out how, in some ways, our country seems to drive, you know, our country seems to be the engine of the economic train of the world. And it seems like they're stealing the coal right and left.
I think there's nothing left to put in the engine. Well, let's get Isaac's. Isaac, can you perhaps explain to Jim why we are encouraging our factories to move overseas? Why we are actually helping to finance our factories moving overseas and giving them special tax breaks and even giving guarantees on loans for massive economic development in communist China? Why would we do something that ridiculous?
Well, you know, this is my understanding, of course, and this is completely detached from everything that has been taught at the university, is how I understand it is the cheaper labor exists outside the U.S. because there aren't restrictions placed in businesses for working hours and conditions and child labor. But the problem is that when you're sending your economy out to these factories and you're sourcing them out to all these countries, especially those that are your rivals, if not serious threats like China, what happens is you become dependent on those countries. And then I think in the long run what happens is that countries such as China, if it is in control of our economy and we are not in possession of it ourselves, then the question becomes, who is really running this country?
Amen to that. Well, anyway, anything else you wanted to say there before we let you go?
No, sir, that's all. Best of luck to your guest.
All right, thanks so very much.
Yep.
Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. And we seem to have lost Mike, who was calling in. I think that there are a lot of incredible things that are going on today that just don't make sense. And this is why we encourage people to listen to our programs, because, you know, we'll try to explain as time goes by a lot of these unanswerable situations that are developing. Well, are there other children, I shouldn't say children, other young people up there on the campus who feel as you do, that are maybe just a little afraid to speak out?
There's definitely other students on the campus. But I have to say that they're afraid to speak out because there are consequences to what they may say in the classroom or what they may write on their papers. And so they are in hiding. It sounds funny, but it's sad. And I know for my sister, she's 19, and she goes to UC Davis. And when she was applying to universities, she told me that she went to one of, I think it was some kind of Ivy League school, and they had their flyers that said the coming out of the closet day for young conservatives.
Well, of course, the situation is much, much different at Davis. I think it's really a more conservative campus than where you are, isn't it?
Yeah, I from what I hear, you know, I haven't been to Davis myself, but...
This is the impression I've gotten. Well, let's go to Brian, who's calling from Philadelphia. Hi, Brian, how are you doing?
Okay, sir.
Do you have a question for our guest?
Do you think it's possible that the communists are still there, but they just went underground for a while, for their opportunity?
Of course they are. I mean, every one of the individual communist states is run by an ex-communist. The KGB is still run by the communists. They've changed its name. The military is run by the communists. The Duma in Russia is run by the communists, and Putin's a lifelong communist. Of course it's still there. Then the communists are in control in Russia and in Korea and in Cuba. But you see, it's all about a perception, Brian. They control the media, or somebody controls the media here. And have you ever noticed they never refer to communist China? Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I've noticed that.
Okay. What's your thoughts on that, Isaac? Why is that? Why is it almost like the conscious effort to conceal from the American people that communism really is a very powerful force in the world still today?
Yeah, you know, it is ideologically a very powerful force, but practically, I mean, it's obvious that it doesn't work. You don't have to be a genius to see that the reason the former Soviet Union collapsed was because it practically did not work. The economy failed, and but I see what you mean when you point out that we are referring to China as China and not to what it should be called as communist.
Right. And the same thing with Korea and, of course, Cuba and Vietnam and the other communist countries throughout the world. So, anything else you wanted to say, Brian?
It just seems like the Nazi Party is coming back in Germany also.
Yeah, that really is. In fact, they're very, very concerned over there. And, of course, what's feeding a lot of this is the tremendous immigration. And of course, country is beginning to cut back on a lot of their social programs. They're even insisting that the people work 40-hour week, and they only get a couple of weeks off a year. And so, you know, when people are used to being taken care of, all of these socialist programs are bankrupting Germany, and that's why they're having to change their programs. And, of course, I think that the Nazis will take full advantage of that. Okay, thanks very much, Brian.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, well, tell us what your thoughts are. We've got about 3 or 4 minutes before we have to let you go. What is your impression of what's going on? What's going on at the university? What's going on in this country today? And are we going to be able to maintain our freedom in this country?
You know, I'm not a prophet. You know, I can't say what entails for us, what I can possibly see as far as the campus goes 5 to 10 years from now. But I can say that as long as students speak out and there are organizations like KnowIndoctrination.org, for instance, that try to provide a forum for these students to come out and speak out against professors that are like little Lenins and Stalins themselves and try to point out this hypocrisy in the campus and the fact that out of one side of their mouth they say freedom of speech and hate-free zone, and then on the other side they say, no, you can't say this and you can't say that because I don't agree with that ideology.
It's almost like there's like a schizophrenia, isn't it? On one hand, they're in favor of academic freedom, and on the other hand, they want totalitarian control. And you can't have it both ways.
Yeah, no, and also, you know, I think the biggest sign of weakness is when the individual that you have a intellectual dispute with has to shut you up rather than listen to your side and then voice his side and then try to understand one another.
And I agree with you totally, and I've come up against that. And so often when you get a conservative speaker on the campus, why the professors will encourage the students to hoot and holler and interrupt so that you cannot have a free expression of ideas. On the other hand, if anybody were to do that to them, they would be incensed. Well, these people sometimes give hypocrisy a bad name. Anyway, we're just about out of time. Isaac, would you have a parting thought for our listeners out across America?
Yeah, I'd like to say that that we as Americans should be very grateful for this this country that you know exists here because of the inalienable rights that were given to us, like it says in the Constitution, to us by God. And we have to do everything in our power to preserve the foundation on which this country was founded on, and not to waver when it comes to communists and socialists and any other antagonists.
God bless you. Thanks so much for being with us, Isaac. Really a pleasure.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. And we'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty.
Have you ever wondered what really happened at Waco? Have you ever wondered if maybe the government was not giving you the full story? Well, there is the most amazing video. It's called Waco, the Rules of Engagement, 2.5 ripping hours of the story of a government onslaught under a group of peaceable people. Now, their religion may be different than yours and mine, but they were still Christians, they still believed in the Bible, and they believed that the government would one day become their enemy and destroy them. Well, Waco, the Rules of Engagement is a video that everybody who loves freedom should see, because the ultimate conclusion is the government did not want them to come out. The government did everything they could to keep them from coming out, to antagonize them, loud music, lights all the time, to totally create a situation where they could not think clearly or would respond normally. Waco, the Rules of Engagement is currently unavailable through regular sources. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR right now.
Have you ever wondered whether you're really getting the truth from the media? Have you ever thought that maybe somebody's controlling your reality? Well, there's going to be a meeting. It's going to be held at the Westin Hotel over by Great America. It's going to be on May 28th and 29th, and it's going to be at the Conspiracy Conference. Now, if you'd like to know more about the Conspiracy Conference, call 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999. This is the fifth exciting year they've had this. Dick Gregory is going to be there, Nick Begich. There's going to be Daniel Hopsicker, Jack McLam. I'm going to have a booth, although I'll not be speaking. You're going to see really the contrast between good and evil. The Conspiracy Conference is a great educational opportunity. We hope that many of you will give serious consideration to going May 28th, 29th. That's 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999.
Leading edge dental.
Are you concerned about your child's
dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body? If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
And we'll be back in just a moment with our... Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course we've asked the question, why are these things happening? Why are we building up communist China? It really doesn't make any sense, unless you, of course, understand history. And if you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, which is available through Radio Liberty, you'll find out that we began financing the world communist movement back in 1918, and we give you example after example. We carry the book, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. It is Professor Sutton's book about how the American government financed the Bolshevik Revolution. We know that in the mid-1930s, when there just wasn't any money to get our economy going, the Federal Reserve was shipping hundreds of millions of dollars to both Stalin and Adolf Hitler, preparing two of the best enemies American money could buy. If you go into my book, we simply quote Herbert Hoover's memoirs, pointing out that in 1918, when, of course, there was terrible starvation in Russia, and the communists had just a small part of the country, and, of course, the anti-communists controlled most of the country, but we gave 97% of the supplies to the communists and 3% to the anti-communists. Why would you do something like that? Well, you can only fast forward right to the present time and realize, of course, that we are doing everything we can to build up communist China. Communism doesn't work, but we're doing everything we can to help it work. We've been keeping the communist government in power in North Korea all the time, saying how terrible and authoritarian they are. Everything was done, of course, to build up the communist government in Vietnam with very special trade status and with massive loans. And if you honestly believe for 1 minute, if we really wanted to get rid of Fidel Castro, we don't want to get rid of Fidel Castro. If we did, why did we send Elian Gonzalez back to him to build up Fidel Castro's stature, not only in Cuba, but throughout the world? Why is it whenever anybody tries to escape from Cuba today, and if they're caught by the Coast Guard before they can get on shore in Florida, we send them back to the prison and tortured? Why would we do something like that? Why did Fidel Castro, when he came to the United States in either 95 or 96, have a long personal private meeting with David Rockefeller, the leader of the capitalist world? And if you want to verify that, it's in David Rockefeller's memoirs. Of course, he put in a little tiny print hoping you wouldn't notice that. Nobody would ask the serious questions that we're asking. Ladies and gentlemen, nothing that's going on today really makes sense. Any more than if you go back and you study who financed Saddam Hussein, the wicked Saddam Hussein, all during the 1980s, why, your tax dollars. And if you want to verify that, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Ask for the article, When an Ally Becomes an Enemy. If you want to know how we created the Islamic terrorist movement, why, of course, ask for the article on the ABCs of Jihad, how we actually were putting out textbooks to train these young Islamic boys in this radical form of Islam. You had to have an enemy if you were going to have a war, if you're going to have World War III. And to put it all together, let me suggest my video, Iraq, the Untold Story, and the syllabus that goes with that, because it will put this together very, very well for you and understand what lies ahead. That's Iraq, the Untold Story, and the syllabus that goes with it. You really want to get the two of them together. You'll certainly want to get our Brotherhood of Darkness video, our Brotherhood of Darkness book, and you'll want to get our latest video, None Dare Call It Genocide. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our website, RadioLiberty.com, where you can listen to our programs directly or indirectly 5 hours a day on the Internet. Sometimes it's on other networks, but you can hear us 5 hours a day. Remember, the shortwave frequency for this program changes on Monday to 11.515. That's 11.515. Pray for America. Pray for revival. But please pray for Radio Liberty. For our provision and protection until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.